Very pleased to have the opportunity to introduce your new president, Joel S. Demske. Joel is the Frederick E. Fisher Eminent Scholar of Accounting at Fisher School of Accounting in Gainesville, Florida at the University of Florida. His undergraduate degrees are from the University of Michigan and his PhD degree from the University of Chicago. He has written a number of books and many, many articles that are used in PhD programs throughout the world. Please join me in welcoming the 2001-2002 President of the American Accounting Association.
Let me begin with two important announcements. One, I would like to thank Bill Kinney for giving back my notes. The other is, following up on Craig's announcement of all this wonderful communication technology in Sarasota, I stand here to report to you that I no longer, as of this moment, have a phone number, an email address, or a P.O. box. So, when I look out as best I can with these lights in my face, it's clear I see some people that I know enjoy going to lunch. And there are some people, at least one in this room, that I know does not enjoy going to lunch. But on one thing, there's unanimity in this room, and that is no one really enjoys a luncheon speaker. And so if you think about it, this actually gives me enormous degrees of freedom and an incredible amount of temptation. So let's see where this goes. Now, in approaching this year and in preparing these remarks, I've been struck by the remarkable willingness of individuals to step up and contribute their time and talent. Linda Bamberger is an example, as is Terry Shevlin, who has agreed to follow Linda as the editor and manager of our flagship journal. In parallel, comments apply to program chair Mark Pincus and to his successor, John Fellingham. And I think equally, if not more on point, is Mary Stone. Mary has brought a steady hand of wise and forward-looking leadership, while at the same time maintaining a full teaching load, a full family load, and running a private tutoring course for me. And we owe Mary a great deal for her efforts, for her work, and for her mere presence in our organization. I have tried without success to trade jobs with her. Now, as tradition calls, I'm supposed to talk about plans and aspirations for the coming year. And what you're about to discover is that I'm going to take a slight variation on that tradition. And I want to share some thoughts with you on accounting scholarship. Now, we have, in the past half century, I think made considerable strides in our knowledge of accounting institutions. And let me give you some examples. One is statistical connections between accounting measures and market prices, a topic so eloquently discussed by Bill Beaver this morning. We've made considerable strides in optimal contracting as another example. Third example, professional judgment processes and biases. Now in the process, we've raised the stature and the relevance and the sheer excitement of intellectual inquiry in accounting, be it in the classroom, the cloakroom, or in our journals. But I also fear that of late, a particular malaise has it settled in. I think our progress has turned flat. Our tribal tendencies have taken hold. And most important, I think our joy in our work has diminished. And let me begin by sharing some what I call warning signs associated with this malaise. In no particular order, I'll begin with textbooks. All right, our textbooks, of course, are our primary communication medium, but they also serve as our statement to the outside world about ourselves. And I see several patterns here. One is the unrelenting march to make every textbook look like People magazine. Form now leads, and I fear swallows substance. Another is the insatiable appetite to list every rule published by the FASB. Closely related is the interest in fads. Everything, including this paragraph, is now subject to a value-added test. Benchmarking, strategic vision, and EVA are now everywhere. Foundations are nowhere. Building blocks now languish in appendices, and worse yet, in wastebaskets. A second indicator is our journals. They have certainly proliferated in number, but we struggle with an intertemporal sameness, with incremental as opposed to discontinuous attempts to move our thinking forward. And we also suffer with referee intrusion and voyeurism. Value relevance, which Bill talked about this morning, is a currently fashionable approach to identifying statistical regularities in the financial market arena. Just as a focus on observable components of compensation is a currently fashionable dependent variable in the compensation arena. Yet we know measurement error abounds, that other sources of information are important and ever-present, that compensation is broad-based and intertemporally managed, that compensating wage differentials are a first-order effect. And yet we continue on the same comfortable path. The third indication is our work habits. We have embraced, and I fear been swallowed by, the multiple adjective syndrome. I think this deserves an acronym, and I've labeled it MAS. We have financial, audit, managerial, tax, analytic, archival, experimental, systems, cognitive, what have you. We all run around with multiple adjectives. This applies to our research, to our reading, to our courses, to our teaching assignments, and even to the organization of our annual meeting. This means we become incredibly specialized. But in the process, we've eroded the ability to communicate among ourselves. And I hope something that's flashing through your mind right now is John Jordan's three diagrams that he talked about on Monday morning. Now, a useful analogy here is linearization. In accounting, we linearize everything in sight. In fact, we're really good at this if you think about it. We have additive components on the balance sheet. We subtract expenses from revenue, right? We allocate costs like mad. And the best example of all is activity-based costing, where its additive representation, by virtue of being additive, denies the scope economy that motivates the firm to assemble the same products under the same roof in the first place. And the importance of linearization is that it denies interaction. It denies synergy. And what I fear we are doing with our multiple adjectives is we are now doing to ourselves what we've done to our subject matter. And I fear if this trend continues, we'll soon have a section on depreciation, another on receivables, and maybe even intangibles. Now, I hasten to add, this particular tendency pestered for some time. And Rick Hankel, in 1988, gave a talk at our annual meeting where he discussed what he called the intellectual boundaries in accounting research. And let me draw a quote from the subsequent publication. In carving out tractable pieces of institutionally defined problems, we inevitably impose intellectual boundaries. My concern arises when, instead of generating fluid, useful boundaries, our processes lead to rigid, dysfunctional ones. It's the end of the quote. Now, I fear that we have perfected and actually made a virtue out of Rick's concern. Fluid boundaries are now held at bay by our work habits and by our natural defenses. Now, a final indicator here is our work in progress, what appears to be coming down the road. Doctoral enrollment is down. That's a fact. In fact, the trend is pretty alarming. But it is also arguably factual that doctoral training itself has become tribal. Now, I've witnessed this personally at recent doctoral consortia and new faculty consortia, and also in the recruiting that we've done in recent years at the University of Florida. And this tendency reinforces the visible patterns in our textbooks, in our journals, and in our work habits. Now, I think it's also important to dwell on the fact that these patterns that I'm identifying are not accidental. They are, in fact, at least in my mind, largely endogenous. So I think it's also useful to go through another list. I call this list the contributors. And I think with both lists, I can manage to annoy just about everyone in the room. But anyway, we'll give it a shot. All right, again, in no particular order. One is employers, their firms, and their professional organizations. Employers want our students well-equipped with the latest consulting fad, or the student well-equipped and able to transition into a billable audit team member or a billable tax consultant within 2 hours of the first day on the job. Immediacy is sought and championed, though often with the caveat that we want critical thinking skills in this billable auditor machine. And we in the university are to run employment training institutes. We are not, in particular, to challenge what is the comparative advantage of university training versus employer training. And in this model, we even look to the employers for intellectual leadership in curriculum design. And that personally appalling idiom, student as customer, reinforces this first job bias, just as do recent program sponsorships by some of the large firms. And I haven't yet mentioned the CPA exam, accreditation bodies, and quasi-accreditation bodies. A second contributor is administrators. Administrators respond to employers, to journalists, to students, and to alumni, but never to tomorrow's students. They're not there yet. Polls and ratings and student evaluations are the currency of their realm. Risk-taking, innovation, fundamentals, long-term growth are not visible. Zero variance is sought, and zero variance comes at the woeful cost of denying options. I might add, we even have a separate section for administrators. The third is publishers. Ask yourself, when Chuck Horngren wrote his path-breaking managerial text, and Prentice Hall published it, did they use a focus group? Do you think Gordon Shillinglaw used a focus group? Would Bill Payton use a focus group? I think it's safe to say fellowship, timidity, and add-ons have replaced fundamental leadership in the publishing industry. Now, in case I missed anyone, we'll turn to ourselves. A final contributor is ourselves, each and every one of us. We have been entrusted for a brief period of time with a body of scholarship. It is our responsibility to care for, to nourish, to deepen this scholarship, and to share it with our students, with each other, and with our successors. Yet we ask employers what should be in our curriculum. We engage in reading games with journalists and students. We squander the 150-hour requirement. We pander to professional exams. We forget our role in the university's governance, and we embrace the isolation of tribalism. Now, as I warned you, no one enjoys a luncheon speaker. And if this is all I had to say, I would suggest we contact Midway Airlines lawyers and join them in filing Chapter 11. But there's more to the story. And this is only half of the self-portrait. The other half is the simply remarkable talent, energy, and goodwill that is in this room and that is in our organization more broadly. And coupled with that is an equally remarkable set of opportunities that are before us. So the trick is, of course, to redirect this talent, this energy, this goodwill towards this abundant list of opportunities. Now, it will come as no surprise when I tell you this has to come from us, from within us. It will not come from the employers. It will not come from the administrators. It will not come from the publishers. It must come from us. And I think it is time for us to push back on these forces. It is time for us to reassert scholarly leadership. And there are, I think, some collective things that we can do in the hopes of catalyzing some behavior changes. And I propose three for the coming year. The first is we will have a theme for the year and next year's annual meeting, reinvigorating accounting scholarship. Now, I'm not so naive as to think that a theme all by itself can accomplish very much, because it is, after all, simply a unifying idea, but it's also one that I hope will be a recurrent element in AAA activities during the coming year. It certainly cannot produce new innovations, but it can remind us of our opportunities and our responsibilities. Second, as an explicit attempt to challenge us to think and communicate more broadly, to broaden our networks, to press back against these short-run pressures, and to return some joy to our activities, we're going to have a curriculum design contest. Now, the details are being posted on the website, on the AAA's website today. But the basic idea is simple. Suppose you and a couple of your colleagues had the opportunity, constraints were not an issue, what curriculum would you really propose for your program? What would you really do? What could and really be done? So show us how rich the study of accounting can be. And there's even a promise. Listen carefully, a no expenses paid trip to San Antonio, where you get to showcase your ideas. Now, I know from personal experience that faculties can be recalcitrant, and in fact, most imaginative when it comes to fighting change or taking risks. I know how to play this game. Okay. But I also know from personal experience that it is possible to abandon an entire curriculum. And good things happen when you do that. So I'm hopeful this exercise will produce some non-tribal thinking. We'll put some ideas on the table that we can share and think about and even use. This is, after all, who we are and who we can be. In another explicit attempt to challenge us to think and communicate more broadly, we're planning some structural changes in next year's annual meeting. Most importantly, we'll try to group papers. In fact, we will group papers by topic and randomize over tribe. Now, ideally, we'll wind up with sessions that have, as an illustration, focus on compensation, but have an analytic paper, an experimental paper, and an empirical paper, and we'll actually speak to one another. And when Richard walks into the other room, he will be short on chairs again. So, in closing these remarks, everybody thought I was going to speak for 3 hours. It is time for us to reinvigorate accounting scholarship, to reassert scholarly leadership. I hope you will join in the curriculum contest or the curriculum challenge and put a scare in the employers, the administrators, the publishers, your colleagues, and in each and every one of us. I hope you will attend and participate in next year's meeting. And I hope you'll leave that meeting a little annoyed. Annoyed for having been goaded into stepping outside your comfort zone, but also with a renewed commitment to accounting scholarship. And I hope the joy of scholarship, and this is my firmest hope.
I'm very pleased to be able to introduce our speaker today. John Wolfe graduated from the Wharton School